I'm not saying that me, the conditioned self, will not sometimes fall into this, because that's the way we have been conditioned. But is it conceivable that you would live a life where you would be so totally alone that you would depend on no one? Please try to understand this. We all depend on one another, don't we, for all kinds of things. We depend on the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker. Interdependence, that's fine. We set up society and we organize society in this way. We allot different functions to different people for the welfare of everyone, so that we will function better and live more effectively, hopefully. But to depend on another psychologically, to depend on another emotionally, what does that mean? That means to depend on another human being for my happiness. Think about that. Because if you do, the next thing you will be doing, whether you're aware of it or not, is you will be demanding that that person contribute to your happiness. Next step, fear. Fear of loss. Fear of alienation. Fear of rejection. Mutual control. Perfect love casts out fear. Where there is love, there are no demands. There are no expectations. There is no dependency. I do not demand that you make me happy. My happiness does not lie in you. If you were to leave me, I will not feel sorry for myself. I enjoy your company immensely, but I do not cling. I enjoy it on a non-clinging basis. What I really enjoy is not you. It's something that's greater than both you and me. It is something that I discovered, a kind of a symphony, a kind of an orchestra that plays. And on the occasion of your presence, it plays one melody. And when you depart, the orchestra doesn't stop. On the occasion of meeting someone else, it plays another melody, which is also very delightful. And when I'm alone, it continues to play. A great repertoire there never ceases to play. That's what awaking is all about. That's why when we're hypnotized, we're brainwashed, we're asleep, it seems so terrifying. But can you be said to love me if you cling to me and will not let me go or will not let me be? Can you be said to love me if you need me? Psychologically, emotionally, for your happiness. My, you've got lots to reflect on there, don't you? Do you know something? This is the universal teaching of all the scriptures, of all religions, and of all the mystics. How come we missed it? How come I missed it for so many years? I say to myself repeatedly. How come I didn't see it? When you read those radical things in the scriptures, my, you begin to wonder, is this man crazy? After a while you begin to think, is everybody else crazy? Unless you hate your father and mother, brothers and sisters, unless you renounce and give up everything you possess, you cannot be my disciple. You've got to drop it all. Not physical renunciation, you understand. That's easy. It's seeing through the delusion. That's easy too. And they drop. The delusions drop. You're in touch with reality at last. And believe me, you will never again be lonely. Never again. You have found it. Loneliness is not cured by human company. Loneliness is cured by contact with reality. Oh, I have so much to say about that. Contact with reality. Dropping one's illusions. Making contact with the real, whatever that is. It has no name. We can only know it through dropping the unreal. You can only know what aloneness is when you drop your clinging. When you drop your dependency. But the first step towards that is that you would even see this as desirable. Because if you don't even see it as desirable, how will you get anywhere near it? And think, that loneliness of yours, will human company ever take it away? Or will it only serve as a distraction? There's an emptiness inside, isn't there? And when the emptiness surfaces, what do? You run away. Turn on the TV. Turn on the radio. Read a book. Search for human company. Seek entertainment. Seek distraction. Everybody's doing that. Big business nowadays. An organized industry. Entertainment. Distract us, entertain us, observe yourself. That's why I said to you this morning, self-observation is so delightful. Such an extraordinary thing. After a while, you don't have to make an effort, because as illusion begins to crumble, and you begin to know this thing that cannot be described, called happiness, everything changes. You become addicted to awareness. Awareness, awareness, awareness. There's a story of the disciple or a traveler who goes to the master and he says, could you give me a word of wisdom? Could you tell me something that would guide me through my days? It was the master's day of silence. So he picked a pad and wrote one word on the pad. He said, awareness, and gave it to the traveler. When the traveler saw that, he said, but this is too brief. Could you expand on it a bit? And the master took the pad back pleasantly and wrote, awareness, awareness, awareness. He said, yes, but what does it mean? And the master took the pad back and wrote, awareness, awareness, awareness means awareness. That's what it means. Watch yourself. I told you this morning, no one can show you how to do it, because he would be giving you a technique. He'd be programming you. But watch yourself. You had a reaction this morning when you were talking to someone. Were you aware of it? Were you not identifying with it? You got angry with somebody. You were aware that you were angry? And were you not identifying with your anger? And later, when you had the time, did you study it? Did you attempt to understand it? Where did it come from? What brought it on? I don't know of any other means of transformation than awareness. I don't know of any other. If any of you discover some other method of self-transformation, I'd be very happy to hear it from you. But I don't know of any other. You only change what you understand. What you do not understand and are not aware of, you repress. You don't change. Just gets repressed. But when you understand it, it changes. When you become aware of it, it changes. My, that was a pretty lengthy discourse, wasn't it? You seem a bit stunned, are you? Why don't we give you a 5-minute break to stand up and stretch, and then we can continue. Gee, I really knocked you all out, didn't I? Yes. I don't know how much help this is going to be, but it's both kind of things. It is. There's some lucky people who see it in a flash. And as far as I know, there is no known means of acquiring this. How do you get it? I don't know. You just become aware. There are others who keep growing into it, slowly, gradually, increasingly, they see things. Illusions begin to drop off. Fantasies begin to be peeled away, and they get in touch with facts. So, there's no general rule, really. There's this famous story of the lion who once pounced upon a flock of sheep, and to his amazement, he found a lion among them. It was a lion who had been brought up by the sheep ever since he was a cub, and he would be bleating like the sheep and running around, and the lion went straight for him. And when this sheep lion stood in front of the real one, he trembled in every limb. And the lion said to him, "What are you doing among sheep here?" And the lion said, "I am a sheep." He said, "Oh, no, you're not. You're coming with me." And he got hold of him and took him to a pool. And he said, "Look." And when the lion, who thought he was a sheep, looked at his reflection in the water, in that minute, he was transformed. Was never the same again. If you're lucky, if the gods are gracious, if you are gifted with divine grace, use any theological expression you want. You might suddenly understand who I is. And you'll never be the same again. Never, ever. And that's where you'll dwell. And nothing will ever be able to touch you again. And no one will ever be able to hurt you again. And you will fear no one, and you will fear nothing. Isn't that extraordinary? You live like a king, like a queen. This is what it means to live like royalty, not the rubbish where you get your pictures in the newspapers and where you've got a lot of money, but a lot of rot. And you're as terrified and confused as everyone else, and you're trying to hide it. When you fear no one, because you fear losing nothing. When you fear no one, because you're perfectly content to be nobody. Who wants to be somebody here? What's the use of it all? You don't give a damn. It doesn't matter. Success, failure, means nothing. Honor, disgrace, nothing. You make a fool of yourself. Means nothing. My, isn't that a wonderful state to be in? Now, some people arrive at this painstakingly, step by step, through months and weeks of self-awareness. But I promise you one thing, I've not known of one person who would give time to being aware, who wouldn't see the difference in a matter of weeks. Already the quality of your living is changing. You don't have to take it on faith anymore. You're seeing it. You're different. You react differently. In fact, you're reacting less and you're acting more. You see things you've never seen before. You're much more energetic, much more alive. People think that if they had no cravings, they'd be like dead wood. You know what would happen to you? You'd lose your tension. Your fear of failure, your tension about succeeding, and you'd be yourself, relaxed. You wouldn't be driving with your brakes on. That's what would happen. There's a lovely saying of Chuang Tzu that I took the trouble, great Chinese sage Chuang Tzu, that I took the trouble to learn by heart. Hope I remember it, but if we fail, it's all right. It says, when the archer shoots for nothing, he has all his skill. When he shoots for a brass buckle, he is already nervous. When he shoots for a prize of gold, he goes blind, sees two targets. He is out of his mind. His skill has not changed, but the prize divides him. He cares. He thinks more of winning than of shooting. And the need to win drains him of power. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that an image of what most people are? When the archer shoots for nothing, he has all his skill. When you're living for nothing, you've got all your skill, you've got all your energy available to you, you're relaxed, you don't care. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose. Now, there's human living for you. That's what life is all about. That can only come from awareness. And in awareness, as I shall explain as we go along, you will understand that honor doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't. It's a social convention. That's all. And so the prophets didn't bother one bit about it. Honor, disgrace, meant nothing to them. They were living in another world, in the world of the awakened. Success, failure, meant nothing to them. Kind of, I'm an ass, you're an ass, so where's the problem? Somebody said, I think it was a man called Sidney Harris. I recollect reading. He said, the three most difficult things that a human being can do are not physical feats or intellectual achievements. They are, first, returning love for hate. Second, including the excluded. And third, admitting that you are wrong. My, easiest pie, easiest thing in the world, easiest thing in the world. If you haven't identified with me, what's the problem? Yeah, I'm wrong. If you knew me better, my God, you'd see how often I'm wrong. What would you expect from an ass? But I haven't identified with him, see? I is not this. So you cannot hurt me. Can you imagine that? Initially, oh, the old conditioned me will react, and you'll be depressed, and you'll be anxious, and you will grieve, and you will cry, etc. Before enlightenment, I used to be depressed. After enlightenment, I continue to be depressed. But there's a difference. I don't identify with it anymore. You know what a big difference that is? Do you know what it means? I'll say this slowly. Do you know what it means to step outside of yourself and look at that depression and not identify with it and not do a thing to make it go away and to be perfectly willing to go on with your life while it passes through you and disappears? My, if you don't know what that means, you really have something to look forward to. And the anxiety, there it comes. And you're not troubled. How strange. You're anxious and you're not troubled? Isn't that strange? Isn't that a paradox? And you're willing to let this cloud come in, because the more you fight it, the more power you give it. And you're willing to observe it as it passes by. Do you know something? You can be happy in your anxiety. Isn't that crazy? And you can be happy in your depression. It's just that you got the wrong notion of happiness. You thought happiness was excitement. You thought happiness was thrills. You know something? That's what causes the depressions. Didn't anyone tell you that? You're thrilled. All right, you're preparing the way for your next depression. You're thrilled. Have you picked up the anxiety behind that? How could I make that last? Somebody said that yesterday evening. How can I make it last? That's not happiness. That's thrills. That's kicks. That's addiction. That's drugs. Talk about the drug addict. My, I've got something to show you. I wonder how many non-addicts there are in this hall tonight. If you're anything like the average group, very few. Very few. Don't look superiorly down your nose at the alcoholic and the drug addict. Maybe you're just as addicted as he or she is. The first time, my, I'm becoming personal. The first time I got a glimpse of this world, it was terrifying. Terrifying. To understand what it meant to live alone, to have nowhere to rest your head, but nowhere, to leave everyone free, and to be free yourself. To be special to no one. To love everyone. Because love does that. It shines on good and bad alike. And it makes its rain to fall on saints and sinners alike. No difference. It doesn't depend on an object to exist. You don't pull it out. It's there, available. Like the rose. Is it possible for the rose to say, I will give my fragrance to the good people who smell me, and I will withhold it from the bad? Or like a lamp. Is it possible for the lamp to say, I shall give my light to the good people in this room and withhold my light from the evil people? Or like a tree, can a tree say, I'll give my shade to the good people who rest in my shade and withhold my shade from the bad? There are images of what love is all about. But I told you, we don't really know what love is. But it's right there, staring us in the face, in the scriptures. We never cared to see it, because we were so drowned in what our culture calls love, in its love songs and its poems. That isn't love at all. That's the opposite of love. That's desire. That's control. That's possessiveness. That's manipulation. That's fear. That's anxiety. That's not love. And we were told that happiness lies in thrills. It's so painful. It really is so painful to watch those commercials. Happiness is a smooth complexion. A holiday resort. But you know that already. You know that already. Or you wouldn't be here. You know it isn't these things. But then we have other subtle ways of making our happiness depend on other things, both within us and outside of us. I refuse to be happy until my neurosis goes. How about that one? I got good news for you. You can be happy right now with the neurosis. Yes, sir. You want even better news? There's only one reason why you are not experiencing what in India we call Anand. We have a special word for happiness, for this kind of happiness. It's called Anand, bliss. Bliss. There's only one reason why you are not experiencing bliss, this present moment. And it is because you're thinking or you're focusing on what you don't have. Or else, you would experience bliss. You're focusing on what you don't have. Right now, you have everything you need to be in happiness, bliss, anand, right now. Jesus was talking horse sense. He was talking to lay people, to married people, to third world people, to starving people, to poor people. He's telling them, good news, it's yours for the taking. Ready for it? Here goes. But who listened? No one's interested. They'd rather be asleep. Let's have a little interaction.
It's going to pop out of me.
All right.
I think there's only two things in the world, God and fear.
All right. Only two things in the world, God and fear. Love and fear.
But
only two things. There's only one evil in the world. Fear. There's only one good in the world. Love. It's sometimes called by other names. It's sometimes called happiness. It's sometimes called freedom, or peace, or joy, or God, or whatever. But the label doesn't matter really. And there's not a single evil in the world that you cannot trace to fear. Not a one. Not one. Ignorance and fear. Ignorance caused by fear. That's where all the evil comes from. That's where your violence comes from. The person who is truly non-violent, who is incapable of violence, is the person who is fearless. It's only when you're afraid that you become angry. Have you ever thought of that? Think of the last time you were angry. Go ahead. Think of the last time you were angry. Search for the fear behind that. What were you afraid of losing? What were you afraid was being taken away from you? That's where the anger comes from. Think of an angry person, maybe someone you're afraid of. Can you see how frightened he or she is? He's really frightened. He really is. She's really frightened, or she wouldn't be angry. How true. Ultimately, there are only two things: love and fear. But my, I've gone far ahead of what I was planning to do. But I'd rather leave it like this. I'd rather leave it unstructured and move from one thing to another and keep returning to themes again and again, because that's the way to really to grasp what I'm saying, maybe, because when it doesn't hit you the first time, it might the second time, and what doesn't hit one person might hit another. So I've got different themes, but they're all about the same thing. Call it awareness, call it love, call it spirituality, or freedom, or awakening, or whatever. It really is the same thing. So to summarize what I said this afternoon, as you begin to observe yourself, self-observation, watching everything inside of you and outside, I'm going to have a lot to say about that too. Outside, the trees, the stars, the traffic, the faces of friends, the people you're living with, dried leaves, the birds, a pile of stones, water, anything. Observe. Watch. You might suddenly stumble upon a whole world you had never seen. And you'd say, God, I've been here all along. How come I never saw this? To watch everything inside of you and outside. And when there's something happening to you, to see it as if it were happening to someone else. With no comment, no judgment, no attitude, no interference, no attempt to change, only to understand. Only to understand. Now, as you do this, you will begin to realize that increasingly you are disidentifying from me. Saint Teresa of Avila says that towards the end of her life, God gave her this extraordinary grace. She doesn't use this modern expression, of course, but that's what it really boils down to, of disidentifying from herself. Extraordinary liberation at last. You know how it is? John Smith has cancer. I don't know John Smith. John Smith is in me, so I'm not all that affected. If I have love and sensitivity, maybe I'll help, but I'm not all that affected emotionally. You have an examination. I'm not all that affected. I can be quite philosophical about it, and I'll say, well, the more you worry about it, the worse it's going to get. Why don't you take a good break? But when it comes my turn to have an examination, that's something else, isn't it? Because I've identified with me. I identify with my family, my country, my possessions, my body, me. How would it be if I had a grace, if God gave me the grace, that I wouldn't call these things my? That isn't I at all. I'd be detached. I'd be disidentified. That's what it means to lose the self. To deny the self. To die to self. To the ego. To me. To be objective about it. To be disidentified and detached from it. Now, as you begin to practice this, you could try it tonight. You know, it's not a matter of nerves now or muscles. tightening your muscles. But as you move around, if you can be aware of what you're doing, if you can be aware of what you're saying, if you can be aware of how you are reacting, what a difference. Won't be long before you notice the effect. It's sad to think that human beings would go through life with fixed ideas, programming, and they never change, and they're not aware. They're just not aware of what's going on. Very religious people, some of them, but no awareness. I really meant that. You might as well have been a block of wood. You might as well have been a rock. Really. A talking, walking, thinking machine, computer. That's not human. Puppet, jerked around by all kinds of things. Press a button, you'll get the reaction. I told you that yesterday. You could almost predict to the nth degree how a human being is going to react. Just study the person, for a day, and I'll tell you exactly how he or she is going to react. I sometimes write it on a piece of paper for my therapy group and say, so-and-so is going to start the session. So-and-so will reply. They're the machines, true to plan, go on. That's painful. They're not aware. And don't listen to the people who say to you, forget yourself, go out in love to others. Don't listen to them. They're all wrong. The worst thing you can do is to forget yourself when you go out to others. Go out in your so-called helping attitude. You know, this was brought home to me very forcefully many years ago when I did my studies in Chicago in psychology. We had a course in counseling for priests. It was only open to priests who were actually engaged in counseling and who agreed to bring a tape to class. So we did that. Well, must have been about 20 of us. When it was my turn, I brought a cassette, a tape, to class that had engraved on it, impressed on it, an interview that I had with a young woman. Well, I took it to class, the instructor put it in a tape recorder, and we all began to hear it. After 5 minutes, as was his custom, the instructor stopped the tape. He said, any comments? Someone said to me, why did you ask her that question? I said, I'm not aware that I asked any question. As a matter of fact, I'm quite sure I did not ask any question. He said, oh, no, you did. See, I was quite sure because I was consciously following the method of Carl Rogers, person-oriented, non-directive. You don't ask questions, you don't interrupt, you don't give advice, etc. So I was very aware that I mustn't ask questions. All right, there was a bit of a dispute between the two of us, and the instructor said, why don't we play that again? So we played that again and heard it. And there, to my horror, was a whopping big question, as tall as the Empire State Building. A huge question, you couldn't miss it. Now, you know, the interesting thing was that I had heard that question 3 times. The first time, presumably, when I asked it. The second time, when I listened to the tape in my room because I wanted to take a good tape to class, see? And the third time, when I heard it in the room, in the classroom, but it hadn't registered. I wasn't aware. That happens frequently in my therapy sessions or spiritual direction sessions or whatever. We tape the interview. We record it. And again and again and again, when the client listens to it, he or she says, you know, I didn't really hear what you said in the interview. I only heard it when I listened to the tape. More interestingly, I didn't really hear what I said in the when we had the interview. I only heard, look what I said. Somewhat humiliatingly, I sometimes discover what I said when I'm listening to the tape with her. That's shocking. It's shocking to discover that I'm saying things. I'm saying things, for heaven's sake, in a therapy session that I'm not aware of. The full import of which only dawns on me later. You call that human? Forget yourself and go out to others? Well, I had an even more shattering experience that morning, because when we listened to the whole tape, the instructor said, "Any comments?" One of the priests, a 50-year-old man, whom I took a liking to, he'd sit in one corner of the room smoking his pipe. He said to me, "Tony, I'd like to ask you a personal question. Would that be all right?" I said, "Yeah, go ahead. If I don't want to answer it, I won't. What's the personal question?" He said, "This woman you're interviewing, is she pretty?" Now, you know, honest to goodness, I was at a stage of my development or undevelopment, or whatever you want to call it, where I really didn't notice if someone was good-looking or not. I really didn't. It didn't matter. I mean, she was a sheep in the flock of Christ. I was the pastor. I sort of... I dispensed help. Yes, I mean, it's angry. That's the way we were trained, the good old training. So I said to her, said to him, "What has that got to do with it, whether she's pretty or not?" He said, "You don't like her, do you?" "What? You don't like her, do you?" Well, hadn't ever struck me that I liked or disliked people, or mostly occasional powerful likes and dislikes would register in consciousness, but the other ones wouldn't. You know, it was mostly neutral. I said, "What makes you say that?" He says, "The tape." I said, "You mean you get that from the interview?" He said, "Yes. Would you like me to show you?" I said, "Yes, I'd be happy to." We went through that tape again, and he said, "Listen to your voice here, how sweet it has become. You're irritated, aren't you?" I was. I was only becoming aware of it right there. "And look what you're doing here, non-directively, for heaven's sake." You know what I was saying to her? I was saying, "Don't come back," but I wasn't aware of it. And he said, "She's a woman. She'll have picked this up." They say women have a sixth sense. Yes. Remember the guy who's supposed to have had a sixth sense, but he lacked all the other five? So he said, "You're saying, don't come back, don't come back." He said, "When are you supposed to meet her next?" I said, "Well, next Wednesday." He said, "My guess is she won't come back." She didn't. I waited for 1 week, she didn't come. Waited for another Wednesday, she didn't come. Then I called her. I broke one of my rules. I called her. Generally don't. Let them take the initiative. Don't be a rescuer. But I said to her, "You remember that tape you allowed me to make for the class?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "You know, it was a great help because they pointed out all kinds of things to me," I didn't tell her what, "that would help me to be more effective. So if you'd care to come back, you're free to. I think I'd be somewhat more effective." She said, "All right, I'll come back." She did. The dislike was still there, hadn't gone away, but it wasn't coming in the way. That's important. What you are aware of, you are in control of. What you are not aware of is in control of you. You are always a slave to what you're not aware of. When you're aware of it, you're free from it. It's there, but you're not affected by it. You're not controlled by it. You're not enslaved by it. That's the difference. Awareness. Awareness, awareness, awareness. What they trained us to do at that course was to become participant observers. Like I'd be talking to you To put it somewhat graphically, I'd be talking to you, and I'd be here talking to you, and I'd be out there watching you and watching me. When I'm listening to you, it is infinitely more important for me to listen to me than to listen to you. See if you could get that one. When I'm listening to you, it's infinitely more important for me to listen to me than to listen to you. Of course it's important to listen to you, but it's even more important that I be listening to me. Or else I won't be hearing you. Or else I'll be distorting everything you say. Or else I'll be coming at you from my own conditioning. Or else I'll be reacting to you in all kinds of ways, from my insecurities, from my need to manipulate you, from my desire to succeed, from my irritations and feelings that I may not be aware of. So it's frightfully important that I be listening to me when I'm listening to you. That's what they were training us to do. It was a training in awareness. And as I shall tell you this morning, how important it is that you be listening to yourself, observing yourself, watching yourself constantly as you react to life and to people, to the world. So important. How does one do this? Does one do this consciously? You know, I said to you, observe yourself the way you would be observing someone else. That needs a little explanation. You don't always have to imagine yourself hovering up somewhere there in the air, looking at yourself. No. You know, to give you an idea, a rough idea of what I'm talking about, imagine a good driver is driving a car. He's concentrating on what you're saying. In fact, he's having an argument with you. That's how much he's concentrating. But he's perfectly aware of all the road signals. And the moment anything untoward happens, the moment there's any untoward sound or noise or bump, he hears it at once. He says, you sure you closed that door back there? How did he get that? He was aware. He was alert. The focus of his attention was on the conversation, on the argument. But his awareness was more diffuse. He was taking in all kinds of things. What I'm advocating here is not concentration. That's not important. Lots of meditative techniques inculcate concentration. I'm wary of those things. They involve violence. And they frequently involve further programming and conditioning. What I would advocate is awareness, which is not the same as concentration at all. Concentration is a spotlight. Awareness, floodlight. You're open to anything that comes within the scope of your consciousness. Big difference. So when you're practicing awareness, you're never distracted. You may go to sleep. Go to sleep even though you're awake, which means you may turn off the awareness. Then you're asleep, even though you're talking and reading, etc. But when the awareness is turned on, there's never any distraction because you're always aware of wherever the focus of your attention happens to be. Like now I'm looking at those trees. Now I'm worrying. Was I distracted? You would have been distracted only if you were meant to concentrate on the trees. But if you're aware that you're worried, that isn't a distraction at all. Just be aware of where the focus of your attention goes. And above all, if you're practicing this, even to a limited degree, you will develop an extraordinary skill. When anything goes awry, or anything untoward happens, you'll be alerted at once. Something's going wrong. The moment any negative feeling comes into consciousness, you'll be alerted. Something going wrong. And you'll give it your attention. Something like the driver of the car. Awareness awareness, awareness. Now, I told you that as you begin to practice self-observation, you will see yourself that you are observing you. I am observing me. Now that's a strange phenomenon. I observing me. Remember I told you yesterday, St. Teresa of Avila would say that God gave her the grace of disidentifying herself from herself. You know, little children talk that way. A two-year-old will say, Tommy had his breakfast this morning. He doesn't say I. He says Tommy. Third person. Mystics feel that way. They don't feel I have a problem. They feel Tommy has a problem. That's extraordinary. They have disidentified from themselves. And at last, they're at peace. This is the grace that St. Teresa of Avila was talking about. This is the I that the mystic masters of the East are constantly urging people to discover. And of the West too, because you can count Meister Eckhart among them. They're urging people to discover the I. Who's I? What's I? Now the important thing is not, listen to this sentence carefully, the important thing is not to know who I is or what I is. You'll never succeed. There are no words for this. The important thing is to drop the labels. As the Japanese masters, the Zen masters say, don't seek for truth, only drop your opinions, drop your theories. Don't seek for truth. Truth isn't something you seek for. If you would stop being opinionated, you would know. If you would drop your beliefs and opinions, you would know. Now something similar happens here. If you would drop your labels, you would know. What do I mean by labels? Every label you can conceive of, except perhaps human being. I am a human being, fair enough. Doesn't say very much. But when you say I am successful, that's crazy, because success is not part of the I. Success is something that comes and goes. It could be here today and gone tomorrow. That's not I. But you said, I am a success. That's where you were in error. That's when you got plunged into darkness. You identified yourself with success. I am a failure. I am a lawyer. I am a businessman. Now you know what's going to happen to you if you identify yourself with these things? You're going to cling to them. You're going to be worried that they may fall apart. And that's where all your suffering comes in. That's what I meant in the beginning when I said to you, if you're suffering, you're asleep. Do you want a sign that you're asleep? Here it is. You're suffering. You're asleep. Suffering is a sign that you're out of touch with the truth. Suffering is given to you that you might open your eyes to the truth, that you might understand that there is some falsehood somewhere. Just as physical pain is given to you to understand that there's a disease, there's an illness somewhere. So suffering points out that there's some falsehood somewhere. Suffering occurs when you clash with reality. When your illusion clashes with reality, when your falsehood clashes with truth, then you have suffering. Otherwise, there is no suffering. Now listen very carefully. The next few minutes, this sounds a bit pompous, but it's true. The next few minutes could be the most important minutes in the lives of some of you. If you could grasp this, you've hit upon the secret for awakening. You would be happy forever. You would never be unhappy again. Nothing, but nothing would have the power to hurt you. And I mean that, nothing. It's like, you know, you take black paint and throw it up in the air. And keep throwing black paint in the air. The air is uncontaminated. You don't color the air black. And no matter what happens to you, you remain uncontaminated. You remain at peace. There are human beings, and you know it, who have attained to this. That is what I call human, not what people are generally living. That's what I call being a human being. That's what I call natural. Not this nonsense of being a puppet, jerked about this way and that, having any event or any person tell you how to feel, and then you proceed to feel it. They call it being vulnerable. Ha! I call it being a puppet. Want to be a puppet? We press a button and you're down. You like that? So there it is. If you do not identify with any of those labels, first of all, most of your worries cease. What are you generally worried about? Later we'll talk about your fear of disease and death. But ordinarily you're worried about what's going to happen to your career. A businessman. Small-time businessman, kind of, 55 years old. He's sipping beer somewhere at a bar, and he thinks, well, look at my classmates. They've really made it. The idiot, they've made it. What do you mean they've made it? They got their names in the newspapers? You call that made it? Huh? They got their names in the news, in the prison journal, huh? Which all the prisoners are reading? And he thinks they've made it. Successful. President of a corporation, the other guy has become the chief justice, and somebody else has become this, and the other person has become that. Monkeys, all of them. Who determines what it means to be a success? The main preoccupation of society is to keep society sick. And the sooner you realize that, the better. Every one of them. Most of them. They're loony. They're crazy. You became the president of the lunatic asylum, and you're proud of it. It means nothing. It really means nothing. Being the president of a corporation has absolutely nothing to do with being awake, or being happy, or being a success in life. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Having a lot of money has nothing to do with being a success in life. You're a success in life when you wake up. When you don't have to apologize to anyone. When you don't have to explain anything to anyone. You don't feel the need to explain anything to anyone. You don't give a damn what anybody thinks of you or what anybody says about you. You have no worry. You're happy. Now that's what I call being a success. I don't know about you. So this poor guy is thinking sadly that he isn't a success like his classmates. Nobody has ever told him that having a good job and being famous and having a great reputation has absolutely nothing to do with happiness or success. Nothing. It's totally irrelevant. And so he's worried about what his children will think about him. What will the neighbors think about him? What will his wife think? He should have become famous. That's what your society and your culture is drilling into your head day and night, and so is mine. People who made it. Made what? Made asses of themselves. Because they drained all their energy in getting something that was worthless. And they're frightened, and they're confused, and they're puppets like the rest. Look at them strutting across the stage. Look how upset they'd get if they had a stain on their shirt. You call that a success? Look how frightened they are at the prospect that they may not be re-elected. You call that a success? So controlled, so manipulated. These are not happy people. These are miserable people. They don't enjoy life. They're constantly tense and anxious. You call that human? And do you know why that happened? There's only one reason. They identified with some label. They identified the I. That was their error. With their money, with their job, with their profession. Heard about the lawyer who says to a plumber, when he's looking at the plumber's bill, he says, "Hey, you're charging nearly $200 an hour. Even I don't make that kind of money as a lawyer." And the plumber said, "Even I didn't make that kind of money when I was a lawyer." He said, right, so... So you could be a plumber or a lawyer or a businessman or a priest. That does not affect essential I. That doesn't affect you. I change my profession tomorrow. That's like changing my clothes. I is untouched. Are you your clothes? Are you your name? Are you your profession? Stop identifying with that, because that will come and go. You know what happens when you really understand this? No criticism can affect you. No flattery or praise can affect you either. When someone says, "You're a great guy," what's he talking about? He's talking about me. He's not talking about I. I is neither great nor small. I is neither successful nor a failure. It is none of these labels. These things come and go. These things depend on the criteria that your society establishes. These things depend on your conditioning. These things depend on the mood of the person who happens to be talking to you right now. They have nothing to do with I. I is none of these labels. Me is generally selfish, foolish, childish, and a great big ass. So when you say, "You're an ass," so you're telling me, haha, I've known it for years. That guy there, the conditioned self, what did you expect? I've known it for years. Why did you identify with him? Silly. That isn't I, that's me. Now, here are those important minutes I was telling you about. You want to be happy uninterruptedly. Happiness is uncaused. Try to understand that. Happiness, true happiness, is uncaused. You cannot make me happy. You are not my happiness. you say to the awakened person, why are you happy? And the awakened person replies, why not? Happiness is our natural state. Happiness is the natural state of little children to whom the kingdom belongs. Until they have been polluted and contaminated by the stupidities of our societies and our cultures. To acquire happiness, you don't have to do anything, because happiness cannot be acquired. Does anybody know why? Because you have it already. How can you acquire what you already have? Then why don't you experience it? Because you've got to drop something. You've got to drop an illusion. You don't have to add anything on to be happy. You've got to drop something. Life is easy. Life is delightful. It's only rough on your illusions. You've got illusions. You've got ambitions. You got greed, you got cravings. You know where they come from? From your having identified with all kinds of labels here.